Thanks, everybody, for tuning into The Sure Thing today. Warren and Ryan here with you. It is January 20th. We will have picks for the divisional round of the playoffs. Give a little update. Last week, we talked about the most receiving and rushing yards in the playoffs. We got some odds updates after week one, or after the wild card round, I should say. So I'll talk about that. And then I have a story from F1 Esports. Interesting story from F1 Esports that I saw last week, and so I'll bring it up today. You check us out Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Anchor FM, as well as the iHeartRadio app under the podcast section. Ryan, how's it going today? It's cold in the D.
It is indeed. Nowhere near what we saw last year, but the temp is low, and then that wind howling around. Oh, my goodness.
If wind is howling, hey, it's not February yet, though. That's when we get the electrical grid doesn't start to work. So we're only like a couple weeks out from that. So this is a little early pre-spell.
Yeah, it's people keep saying that, it's not February yet. I know that's when now is usually when it's getting down like really, really cold. But when that wind's whipping through, man, that stuff is no joke. We're here. Had some truck problems earlier this week. Looks like we got those figured out, and we didn't have to spend $10,000 to do it. So that was nice. Here we are, ready for some playoffs.
That's good. Or you could just be like me, when you have a car issue, you just keep driving it.
Well, the problem was that I couldn't drive it. Or else I would have. I'm right there with you. Tried to put it off as long as possible. So what it was so a couple months ago, or that last month, I went to go start my car or start my truck, and it wouldn't turn on. And so it was actually right while I was getting my teeth cleaned by Jamie and went to go start my truck to leave, and it wouldn't start. Luckily, her dental office is like literally in the same shopping center as a Driver's Edge, type deal. So I told him, I was like, hey, truck won't start. Try to jump it. It won't work. They brought over their little battery jumper box, wouldn't jump it. So I was like, I don't know, are you guys able to get it over there? They said, yeah, we'll get it over here. Don't worry about it. They said, yeah, the battery is dead as a doornail. It was time to replace it. So they replaced it. Well, Friday or Saturday, went to start my truck. Me and I had my son, we went to Walmart. Everything was fine. Go to get in the car, leaving Walmart, truck won't start. I was like, are you kidding me? So luckily, again, fortunate that Walmart is literally like a 3 or 4 minute walk from the house. So I grab the boy, we walk back to the house. Jamie gets home. I come back, try to jump the truck, doesn't start. And so then it did start. And then I went to go start it up the next day, it wouldn't. So it turns out we have a bad starter. What pisses me off though is when I had it fixed the first time, when I had the battery replaced, I was like, hey, check the starter, see if there's anything else, whatever it needs to get done, do it. They're like, oh, everything looks great. Everything looks fine. Just need a new battery. I'm like, you bastards. And so now here I am, luckily my father-in-law, he has a company car, and then he has his, personal car. So he let me drive his personal truck this week while my truck was in the shop. So
tough scene.
Yeah, it's, it is what it is.
All right. One other thing. There's also some Cowboys I want to clean up. I want to touch on as well. Before we get to that, what is more annoying? People telling you about their fantasy team and you have to act like you care, or people sharing their Wordle and just clogging up the timeline?
I think if the Venn diagram is just a perfect circle,
I would agree.
Like they're both. I played Wordle for like, I don't know, 2 or 3 days, probably about a month ago. And I think I was playing the wrong one. I don't know if there's two different ones, but like
the ones from the Daily Mail, I think.
Oh, okay. I just went and downloaded the one in the App Store. I thought that's where it was.
Oh, they do it from the Daily Mail, I think, is what I thought.
Ah, that makes more sense. Okay. Cause like I downloaded it and I was like, all right. Yeah. Like, yeah, this is fine, I guess. And it was literally the exact same thing where you get 5 spaces and you got to guess the whole deal, but they were saying that it was a word of the day, and every time I would get the word right, I'd get a new one. And I was like, okay,
yeah, that's not right.
That, and so I was like, that doesn't make much sense. I was killing the game, like, just, and then after eventually I was like, all right, this is stupid, like I'm just guessing the same words over and over and over again and just trying to piece them together. So I punted on it, and now it's blowing up, the whole Wordle thing. But yeah, it's
well, you're on the wrong one.
I was on the wrong one, true. But you know, I got the general idea, I guess.
I don't know. The idea is you were playing multiple a day. The whole thing is you get one a day.
Yeah.
I don't mute words on Twitter, but I'm close to muting Wordle.
It's bad.
It's bad. All right, let's get into the football. First, let's talk a little Cowboys before we get into the divisional round. So obviously they lost on Sunday. We talked a lot about it on Monday's show, and now the fallout's coming out. And the one thing I cannot understand in the fallout from the game on Sunday is that, or I shouldn't say I don't understand, but okay, if you want to fire McCarthy, go ahead. You could go ahead and can him. I don't have any problems. Earlier in the season when they were winning a ton of games, I thought, hey, you know what? If they lose in the first round of the playoffs, if they're one and done again, he's going to get the axe, and they're gonna just, if the offense is playing well, they're going to promote Kellen Moore because they don't want him to go. And they want him to stay. Like he was a package. He was pretty much just kept on staff, kind of like Jason Garrett was when he was an offensive coordinator with Wade. And he's whatever Jerry wants. Well, I guess I misjudged the coordinator, because now it seems like everybody wants Dan Quinn if they fire McCarthy, which I don't think they're going to end up firing him. But for him to be the head coach. And I also don't understand why all these teams that have head coaching vacancies are like rushing to hire Dan Quinn. Look, if you want to interview Dan Quinn, fine. I didn't know. Do your due diligence if you're a team. Interview 5, 6, 7 guys. Interview off the beaten path guys. Like the Texans, they get a lot of stick, and they get like people make fun of them a lot, but like. Last year, they interviewed Josh McCown, and people were like, "Whoa, what's that?" Well, everybody, whenever they've been around him, has said, "Well, he's like another coach on the field and stuff like that." Well, if he's a coach on the field, why not interview him for a head coaching job? This year, they interviewed Hines Ward. Like, that's pretty crazy. But you know what? They're casting a wide net. I don't understand the Dan Quinn stuff. Yes, he helped transform the defense. It also helps when you draft Micah Parsons to transform the defense. But like, do you forget that the guy choked away as the biggest loss in super choke job in Super Bowl history, and then finished like 7-9 the next 2 years and was underperforming? Like, I don't understand why you want Dan Quinn, because you want the scheme for the Cowboys defense. I think it's more that they got better players on defense, and that's why the Cowboys defense played better this year. Guys took some leaps. They got way more turnovers this year than they did last year because players played a little more aggressive, and they got burned for it too in the back end. But I just don't understand the Dan Quinn hype. Like, he's a retread coach. We saw it. Yeah, he went to a Super Bowl, but I just don't understand it.
No, I agree. Yeah, is Dan Quinn a great coordinator? I think so. But like you said, the fact that they were able to have DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory for a good majority of the season, like you said, drafting Micah Parsons, who could be defensive rookie of the year, probably will be defensive rookie of the year. That helps. Trevon Diggs, you know, when he's not getting burned, he's picking off balls left and right. That obviously absolutely helps. And when you go from the worst defense in the league to right in the middle, you know, in a 1 year span, then yeah, you're going to get some love, and you know, people are going to show you some, give you some credit for that. I think a lot of his success in Atlanta had to do with his offensive coordinators. He did a really good job hiring some good offensive coordinators. And that's why they had the success they did. Matt Ryan hasn't been the same since Kyle Shanahan left. That team wasn't the same once Kyle Shanahan left, and some of the other coordinators, I think Sark was in there for a little bit. So you know what I mean? Like what he did really well was hire some guys around him. Now, the whole fire Mike McCarthy thing, I get it, but I don't think that's the right move. Like I said, I was having this conversation with somebody the other day. The guy, there's something to him that he can get the boys going. He can get the boys riled up, whether it's smashing a watermelon, whether it's the mojo moment or whatever it may be, even if it's not that, you know, whatever the case may be. He's got something in that locker room that he can get the guys up and ready to play. Now, in game, we've seen the clock management. We've seen, you know, some of the jokes made at his expense because of the in-game decisions. Dan Quinn's right there with him with poor in-game decisions. We saw in Atlanta, you know, kicking a field goal to make a two-score game. He did that a couple times. And so, you know, you got to go with kind of, there's maybe five coaches that are the full package where, you know, they can scheme up a good offense or defense, whatever their expertise is, can make some good in-game decisions, are able to get the boys going. There's not a lot of coaches that can do that. So you got to take some good with the bad. I think Mike McCarthy and Dan Quinn are very similar, the same guy. One's just an offensive guy, one's a defensive guy. And so everyone tripping over themselves trying to hire Dan Quinn is a little bit, you know, of a head scratcher, especially some of these teams that are like, you know, not too far away from, you know, being successful or competing. And then everyone that's saying, get rid of McCarthy, you know, I think that's laughable too, because some people are loving Kellen Moore and hating Mike McCarthy. I think if you're pissed at one, you got to be pissed at the other, and vice versa.
Yeah, look, it's been pretty clear that Mike McCarthy has said that Kellen Moore like runs the offense,
right?
And he's calling plays, which is also, I would say, which I think we both raised flags when they hired McCarthy, was that okay? If he's coming in, you got rid of Jason Garrett. The last season of Jason Garrett, or the last two seasons, Kellen Moore was the offensive coordinator, right? So then if you keep a guy who was the offensive coordinator under Garrett, aren't you going to have like the same offense that was there under Jason Garrett? Well, obviously last year, it's hard to judge because Dak only played four games. But like, you're still having some stuff from the Garrett era. And like that offense that nobody really liked. So McCarthy comes in after a year off. He's an offensive guy and everything. You're saddling him with an offensive coordinator that it was pretty much a prerequisite that if you're the head coach, Kellen Moore is the offensive coordinator. And now, yeah, you could say, hey, you would hope that McCarthy and Kellen Moore are able to talk a lot about this, about the offense. McCarthy puts some of his stuff in there. Kellen Moore has a lot of creative stuff out there. They can kind of gel together. I don't think there's really a gelling together of the offense. And like, if you want to go back to that, like last play of the game, and the offensive coordinator called that, like, I don't think McCarthy is saying, you know what? Run the quarterback draw. He's not calling plays. He's not calling plays. Yeah, you would think, hey, you might be able to overrule or suggest something. But again, he's not calling plays in that situation. So it's not his call. And yeah, yesterday he says, I would do it again. He's not going to throw his offensive coordinator under the bus. That's not what coaches do. He knows he's got to take the blame for it and face the firing squad for it. Like, he's not throwing those guys under the bus. I just still don't understand, if you bring McCarthy in, you saddled him with a prerequisite of an offensive coordinator that's not going to run like his main system. You brought him in because he's an offensive guy. You wanted to improve the offense. He also won a Super Bowl. But like, you've already saddled him from the start. So like, maybe it's a good thing if Kellen Moore goes and gets a head coaching job in the offseason. Like, he's still getting a bunch of interviews. I bet a team comes very close to hiring him, if not hiring him. But maybe it's a good thing, because then he could bring his own guy. Like, yeah, he did a lot of, as you said, Dan Quinn, good job at hiring coordinators. That's what you want your head coach to do, make good hires. He obviously struggled in Atlanta at the end. But so McCarthy hires his friend Mike Nolan. That was a bad move. You know what? He realized it early on, canned him, brought in Dan Quinn. Everybody agrees. Good offensive coordinator, good defensive coordinator, good hire there. Maybe he's able to do the same thing with an offensive coordinator if Kellen Moore goes, because Jerry's not firing him. He's here. He's probably got a lifetime contract with the Cowboys until he's the head coach or gets a head coaching position elsewhere. I just don't get still why you're saddling the head coach you brought in here, and then you're not like fully running a system. You're bringing in a guy that he had to be, that was already here before. That's the whole thing that I don't understand. And it just goes to like how the Cowboys run their organization. It's like, they have their favorites. Obviously they have these young guys that Jerry wants to be credited for, like Garrett. Oh my God. He's the wonder child. Kellen Moore. He's the wonder child earlier in the season. And like that clouds his vision from actually like running what the coaches want. And like, you're never going to get. Okay. So who would you say the top head coaching candidates are the last couple of years? So when they hired McCarthy in there, Kevin Stefanski was hired. I would say Josh McDaniels was a top candidate. He ended up not getting the Browns job. Who else a couple of years ago? I think Zach Taylor was hired at the same time or maybe a year before. Like, who are the guys? No one's going to come work in Dallas when they know they're going to be a puppet and they're going to have to deal with all these prerequisites and stuff.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's a lot of times like when you hire a head coach before you hire a GM, you know, kind of the same thing there where, excuse me, if you're a head coach, you should, and I mean, rightfully so, have say over who the rest of your coaching staff is. I mean, I don't think that's a, you know, novel concept. That's what 95% of the league does, if not more than that. So yeah, no, the fact that it's like, hey, you have to come in, or we want you to come in and coach, but you have to keep this guy. Well, it's like, well, what if he's not performing well? Now it's going to look bad on me because I'm the head coach. So his bad job reflects poorly on me. If you want this guy to stick around so much, just make him the head coach. You know what I mean? And obviously that's kind of what happened with Jason Garrett. I don't think that's going to happen with Kellen Moore. I think Jerry kind of realizes that, I think anyway, and I might agree that he's probably a very good coordinator. I don't know how good of a head coach he would be in Kellen Moore, but it's very odd. You know, we'll see how it plays out. I don't think McCarthy's going anywhere. It'll probably be a weight off his shoulders if Kellen Moore does go somewhere else to become a head coach. That way he can pick his own guy and have somebody else come in. And then that way, if they do underperform or they don't perform well, then it can, you know, the blame can lay on his shoulders and he can take it.
Yeah. And then you would have to think that next year is going to be his big year. Like if they don't win a playoff game next year or make the playoffs, he's going to be gone. Like You've seen this guy for 3 years, whatever the first year, whatever excuses you want to make, new coaches still made the playoffs. Two new coaches still made the playoffs in their first year with COVID and everything. Mm-hmm. Then this year, they were really talented and they lost. And like, it wasn't like the 49ers played a great game either. Jimmy G was pretty bad.
They tried to get the game away 100%.
Yes. And like they just got off to a horrible start, and then McCarthy said they were like nervous. He felt that they were nervous. How are they nervous for a playoff game at home? I guess that doesn't make any sense. But yeah, you got to think next year is his last year. And then look, there's a lot of questions about Dak. Dak's getting questioned a lot now, which when you sign the big contract, that comes with the territory. I still think whatever calf thing he had, whatever. And I still think that leg from last year, as I said on Monday, was affecting him. He's not running the ball as much anymore. And that's a big thing. You got so many mobile quarterbacks out there. I just think I would like to see Dak next year before I refer any judgment on him, even though he didn't play well against good teams down the stretch.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the games. Good slate this week. Okay, so first, before that, the games this year on wildcard weekend, whatever, super wildcard weekend, whatever you want to call it. We got about 1.5 good games, and the half of the good game was the Cowboys fourth quarter. So I went back and looked at last year. Is now teams that are the 7 seed were are 0-4. They've never won a game. So I went back and looked at last year for the I looked at the games and how close they were the first week. And so last year the 7 seed were the Colts and the Bears. Obviously, the Bears got drilled against New Orleans. They scored a touchdown on the last play of the game to make it 21-9. That game was bad. But the other game, the Bills against the Colts, that was 27-24. Phillip Rivers had the ball late. They kind of had the same thing, like not able to get a playoff at the end of the game, if I remember correctly. So that was a pretty good game. Seahawks and the Rams, that was about a 10-point game. Goff was out. They won with John Wofford at quarterback. That was pretty close. Tampa, Washington, that secured Taylor Heineke the starting job for this season because he played the Bucs close. There was a 7-point game in Baltimore, Tennessee. That was pretty entertaining throughout. And then the Browns curb stomped the Steelers in a high-scoring game. They were up 28-0 after. So there's only a 2-year sample size, but I look, there are going to be worse teams that make the playoffs when you add two more seven seeds, and the seven seeds this year were like really bad. But I still think it's just a year to year thing, I think, on how good the games on wildcard weekend are.
Yeah, no, we definitely saw, you know, some good games for sure. You know, we kind of talked about this on Monday. I think that's, if you're going to be that seventh seed, like there has to be a minimum win number for you to be able to, like, quote unquote, qualify for the playoffs. You know, just sticking a team in because they're 9-8 and they happen to, you know, they had some luck with other teams losing to certain teams or strength of schedule or whatever, you know, like we saw this year. I think I'm all set on those, but if you get a good team, and the whole point of this, I obviously the point is, you know, a little bit more TV ratings, you know, which equals a little bit more money for the NFL. But there were a couple times where good teams were getting left out of the playoffs. And since they moved it to seven teams, that necessarily hasn't been the case, you know, with getting us good teams in there. And there's been quite a few blowouts. You mentioned there have been some good games, but I think the better games have been the 3-4 teams or the 5-6 teams, you know, playing each other
for sure. But like both wildcard teams this year had winning records. Both wildcard teams last year had, or three wildcard teams last year had winning records. It wasn't like they were the NFC East last year where a 7-9 team won the division. Like they were above 500. They had records. They just happened to not be very like good. They found ways to win games where they beat a bunch of bad teams. But all right, this week here, let's take a little update at the odds of the rushing yards and receiving yards. So last week I said Davante Adams was second favorite to lead most receiving. I have the stats from week one of the receiving chart. And do you have an idea who the new leader in the clubhouse is going to be?
Mike Evans?
Yes, he is. He is plus 500. Jamar Chase is plus 550. Cooper Kupp is plus 600. He's not even in the top five from the week. Travis Kelce is plus 700. And then Davante Adams comes in at plus 800. So you're getting worse odds on Davante Adams. And he is spotting Mike Evans, 117-yard lead. Out of those guys, I think, look, I like Davante Adams. I already got him. I think I might go with Kelce. But they also...
Is Tyreek Hill in there?
Tyreek Hill's in there. He's at plus 1,200.
Okay.
And he... Let's see. Tyreek Hill last week had...
So he's 57 yards.
Yeah. So Kelce, I don't know. It all depends on who you think's going to win these games. Mm-hmm. I think the Bucks might lose this week. I really like the Rams this week. So I'm not really that big. I don't know why I'm going against Brady with Stafford. I think it's because I saw how the offensive line played when Tristan Wirfs went out and Leonard Floyd. You got Donald, you got A'shaun Robinson, Von Miller. I think they're going to cause a lot of problems for Brady and to work the ball down the field. They like to do that. Now, they also love throwing it to the running back. They're getting playoff Lenny back this week, so that could help them. But I don't know. I think the Chiefs are – obviously, they have a tough game against the Bills, but Kelce at plus 700, I don't know. I think that's a good bet there.
Yeah, no, I agree with you about the Rams-Bucks. Not necessarily the Bucks are going to lose or the Rams are going to win, but, you know, that defensive line obviously giving the offensive line some trouble. We'll see if Wirfs and who was the center that went out as well?
Jensen.
See if they're back healthy or close to. So that's going to be an issue. Obviously, we already know the Bucks are banged up at wide receiver. Mike Evans is probably their number one. Not probably, is their definitive number one right now and their top option other than Gronk and maybe even Cameron Brate, their two tight ends. So, you know, as far as the stats go or the wide receiver leader goes, I still like Devontae as well. Stephon Diggs, he didn't have a huge game. He only had 60 yards last week. Dawson Knox actually had more than him. So because I think the Bills are going to win. I think we're going to see them make a little bit of a run here.
Okay.
These next couple games. So he's a guy that I'd keep an eye on. But Kelce, I don't think is a terrible pick. You know,
well, they play the Bills this week, so it's you got to go that they're going to win.
Right. No, I get that. But as far as, you know, coming from your point of view, you know, Kelce's just, he's just been so up and down all season long. You know, maybe this is where he turns it up and really gets things going again. But I still like Devontae Adams because I think they're making it to the Super Bowl. I like Stephon Diggs because I think they're making it to the Super Bowl. None of the wide receivers for the Rams really had big games. Cooper Kupp or Odell. So I think they're out of the mix. But if you can grab Devontae Adams right now at plus 800, that's looking pretty sweet to me.
Yeah, and the 49ers secondary is pretty bad, which the Cowboys were not able to exploit last week. And you have to think that Aaron Rodgers is going to exploit that this week. All right, and then the rushing yards. This is pretty nuts. You got the leader is Elijah Mitchell. He's plus 325. He's got a 13 rushing yard leader, 15, I should say, over Devin Singletary, who's second. And they found a nice running game going on. But he's at plus 600. Other than that, I don't think I really like betting anything on this. The thing I do like, though, about betting for rushing yards is the highest rusher in the divisional round. And I like Mitchell again in that at plus 350. I know Derrick Henry's coming back. I don't care. I've seen the Packers rush defense this year. It is dreadful. He had 96 yards against the Cowboys last week. I think they're going to run the ball a ton. I heard Peter King this morning on the radio say that Jimmy G's thumb is like, it's very, very bad. It's not good. We saw how bad he was thrown in the fourth quarter against the Cowboys. It's going to be like 5 degrees. That does not seem like a recipe for a bad thumb and giving feel for the ball. So I think that they do not offer Deebo Samuel, which is shocking on most rushing yards in the divisional round. But I do like Mitchell plus 350 this week.
Yeah, I love Eli Mitchell. He's been great all season long. Last week when we talked, I said I might take a flyer on Aaron Jones because, again, I just think the volume is going to be there as far as games played.
Yes.
But like you said, the Packers rush defense is very, very bad. And Elijah Mitchell is very, very good. I like that pick too. And, hey, look, Devin Singletary running the ball a little bit more with the Bills, and they look like they're rolling. Should have done it earlier in the year. Some might say should have been running the ball a little bit more all season long.
But Josh Allen also is getting a ton of rushes. Or he only had 6, but he's been running it more.
Josh Allen's good.
He's very good.
Josh Allen's a good quarterback.
He is. So I like that for the divisional round, not for the playoffs. The running back. I think the most impressive performance from the past weekend from the wild card round was Cam Akers on 8 months after tearing an Achilles.
Yeah.
Coming back and having 17 carries for 55 yards. I know that's only like 3.2 yards a carry, but he looks like he had a burst out there. That was very impressive.
And you mentioned Derrick Henry coming back. Obviously, I don't think he's going to be the bell cow. I think he's going to be mixed in sporadically. But the fact that Cam Akers out-carried Sony Michel was shocking to me. You know, I thought he was going to kind of be sprinkled in a little bit. I know he played a little bit week 17. I thought he was going to be sprinkled in, but I think he out-carried him, you know, not by a whole lot, but still the fact he was out there and he got the ball, I think 4 or 5 times more is what I saw last I looked, 4 or 5 times more than Sony Michel. That was very shocking. That's unreal. Unreal that 8 months after coming back from usually you're a year out from like starting rehab, you know, for a lot of those Achilles injuries.
Yes. That was pretty wild. All right, one thing before, let's talk. We didn't talk about, we recorded on Monday. So we didn't get a chance to talk about the Rams. Cardinals didn't happen. I would be worried about Kyler, I think, in the NFL.
100%.
I've always been a little skeptical of him. I know people want to throw Kingsbury under the bus. When a quarterback plays that bad, like how much can that go on coaching? And I don't want to pick sides of Kyler or Cliff. Like, I think Cliff is a flawed. He's failed upwards his entire coaching career. But, like, oh, is it really Cliff's fault that Kyler is not able to throw a pass or throw the pick six at the goal line, like in his own end zone? But he just looks scared on Monday night. Like, he's very good at protecting his body. But only two rushes for him and just going down like He does that a lot, but it seemed like he was just scared on Monday night. I don't know what it is. That was an alarming performance from Kyler.
Yeah, no, very much so. And we've seen that happen a couple times in some big games where he just hasn't performed to the level that we were used to seeing him. Maybe it's because he wasn't playing in a Cowboys stadium or what it was. But yeah, I mean, he was running around for his life and just very hesitant and wasn't very decisive in a lot of things he was doing. So I agree. And I think kind of the tandem of Kliff and Kyler, I think, is a recipe for disaster for the Cardinals, because you expect so much out of both of them. You expect Kyler to be this electrifying player, which he can be, and he is a lot of the time. And then you expect Kliff to be, an offensive genius and guru, which he is a lot of the times. But again, we talked about it earlier with those in-game decisions and some of those calls that you have to make off the cuff, off the rip. I don't know that he, and to his defense, he hasn't had a lot of times to do that. I mean, I know he was at Tech, but it's a whole different ball game, being a head coach in the NFL versus being at Tech. You'd like to see a little bit better decision-making there. But again, I think it's a recipe for disaster because the expectations are so high, and I just don't know if those guys can quite live up to them. Just especially for me being from Arizona and having a lot of friends and whatnot that follow the Cardinals. We've had Kellen Olson. He follows the Cardinals and writes for them out there in Arizona. He kind of was, expressing kind of the same thing of I don't know if this is going to really play out the way we all think it's going to. Like I said, I think they're, I don't know if I'd say they're in trouble, but it's not looking great.
But when you say, okay, coaching in the college and NFL is very different. Obviously, your management duties are different. But when you're still going through the game, I know some of the rules and the clock rules are the same, but you still have to make those decisions. And he was a head coach there for what, 4 or 5 years? So it's not like he's clueless on like game management stuff and stuff like that. He's just probably not good at it.
That very well could be as well. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I won't disagree with that.
And the thing with too, Kyler, DeAndre Hopkins, okay, that's obviously a big loss. Oh, yeah. But that cannot be the main reason why the offense just falters down the stretch, because he's hurt. How many people have injuries? And you still got AJ Green, who doesn't look great, but he's out there. You traded for Zach Ertz. You got Christian Kirk. Rondell Moore looks pretty good as a rookie. Like, you got a bunch of weapons. Edmonds and Connor are back there. Like, I'm not hearing the Hopkins, oh, he's out, so our offensive, that happened 8 weeks ago. You should be able to figure out how to run an offense after 8 weeks of a guy's out there. Obviously it's going to hurt, but I don't think that's a valid excuse. All right, games this weekend. I think the game I like the most this weekend, spread-wise, for a pick, I like the Titans -3.5 against the Bengals.
I 1,000% agree.
The Bengals probably should have lost to the Raiders if the Raiders don't just shoot themselves in the foot every single time they get in the red zone with penalties and everything like that. The Bengals, up and down team this year. They've faced one of the weaker teams in the playoffs. I know Burrow and Chase are great, but AJ Brown's back. Julio Jones is back. Derrick Henry, that's nice. They're getting him back, but Deontay Foreman's also did a good job filling in.
They had about two or three running backs that filled in. Foreman, Nichols,
yeah.
One other, Hilliard or something like that. All three of them did a fine job.
Yes. The Bengals, I don't know. It's not even like you're jealous the Bengals are in the, I'm not, it's not even that. I just don't, I think the Titans are a clearly better team. I think they're better coached. They have a very capable quarterback. Obviously they have a bye this week. And also the Bengals got beat up last week. Like Larry Ogunjobi going out is a big loss. The defensive line is pretty banged up. My favorite play is the Titans -3, and looking at the card, that it could be a light card right now because there's not a lot I like out there.
Yeah, I'm right with you there with the with liking the Titans to cover 3.5. Nice little tidbit here. Obviously the playoffs a little different, but coming off a bye, since Mike Vrabel's been a head coach, 4-0 against the spread and straight up, and every game he's won by 2 touchdowns or more. Take that for what it is, whatever you think. The play is there, but again, so Mike Vrabel coming off a bye, pretty good as it stands, so far in his career. Again, playoffs a little different, but I think they keep this thing rolling. I don't think Tennessee is the best team in the AFC. You know, as a matter of fact, I think that Buffalo Kansas City game, that probably is probably the AFC championship game that everybody wants to see, because I think those are the two best teams in the AFC. I do like that quite a bit. The 49ers game and Green Bay opened at 4.5. Now it's all the way down to 6, or up to 6, I guess I should say. You know, and I like Buffalo as an underdog. That's probably my favorite play is Buffalo as an underdog. Cause I told you, I think they went outright. And so I'm right there riding with you with Tennessee, but I think my favorite game is probably Buffalo plus 2.5.
The other bet I like is the Packers over 27.5.
Team total? But yeah, 100%.
Team total. Sorry. Yeah. Team total. Bosa questionable, still got the concussion. Fred Warner, questionable, shaky secondary. I think they're going to be able to score a lot of points.
And Green Bay's getting a ton of guys back. They're getting Bakhtiari back. They're getting, you know, Randall Cobb back. They're getting a bunch of dudes back that have been out. And they're almost getting back to like 100% strength, which is, you know, kind of scary.
Yeah, no. So I like the Packers over 27.5. Then on Sunday, like we said a little earlier, the Rams. It's hard. Like I want to bet the Rams. I don't know if I can though, just because Stafford's there. And my preseason Super Bowl was the Rams and Bills, so we're still fighting right now. But it's hard to be confident with going up against Tom Brady at home. But I think this could potentially turn into like when they played the Saints on Sunday night. I'm not saying they're getting shut out, but also, the Saints do have Brady's number, it seems like. But just you saw the Eagles getting so much pressure in the second when Wurst went out early on and those guys went out. Like it's hard to talk yourself into not believing that that's going to be a huge factor in this game.
1,000%. That's the very first thing that came to mind when looking at this game was that beat up offensive line going up against a very good defensive line for the Rams. Now, again, I know they're getting playoff Lenny back. Keyshawn Vaughn did a good job last week playing the game, you know, playing running back for them. So, you know, you can kind of maybe hope that keep the defense off balance a little bit by mixing in the running game a little bit. I don't know if the Rams plan on doing this or not, but if I'm Sean McVay, if I'm the defensive coordinator for the Rams, I have Jalen Ramsey shadow Mike Evans, no matter where he is on the field. Because we've seen plenty of times, you know, whether it's Marshawn Lattimore, you know, the stories go on and on about how he struggles with Marshawn Lattimore. A lot of times, like if he's going up against an elite corner, Mike Evans sometimes struggles. So if I'm the Rams, I know usually you like to keep your corners on one side of the field. If I'm them, I try to keep Jalen Ramsey on him all day long and don't let him out of his sights.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with that. I was seeing if some props are up yet, because I was going to go the prop route. No playoff Lenny props up yet. So we'll have to wait and see. I do like Ja'Marr Chase, 8 catches at plus 216. I think they're just going to keep feeding him again.
Force feed him, yeah.
So I don't, his it's 7 is plus 112 too. So I don't, I like that. And then the Bills Chiefs. So yeah, everybody's been saying it. It's the, probably what you would hope is the, AFC championship game. The Bills clowned them earlier in the season when they played them on Sunday night. Obviously, the Chiefs are, that was week 5. The Chiefs are a totally different team. The Bills have been playing great down the stretch. They've won, they've won like 10 of their last 11, I think. They've lost one game since week 8, and that was when they blew it against the Bengals. That's the Chiefs. So the defense has played much better, and the Bills look—they've played great down the stretch. They handled the Patriots like I expected, and you expected too. But I mean, I really don't have a feel on this game at all. I do think the total's a little high at 54.5. Like these games, we've talked about it in the regular season, when these totals get up like in the fifties, they go under. I think like 55 or 60% of the time, like that total seems high. Like I'm not going to bet an under, cause I don't want to be the guy in this game betting the under. And then you see how the Chiefs, I know the Steelers defense isn't good, but they scored what 35 points in a 10-minute stretch. Like, you don't want that as you're an underbetter. It's 0-0 in the at the end of the first quarter. But I really have no idea what I'm going to bet on. I'm not betting a side in this game. I'll probably do some stupid prop that will lose. But I got really no feel on this game.
Yeah, I think that Steelers game, the under or the first score was like, what, like 10 minutes left in the second quarter? Yeah. And with like 7 minutes left in the third quarter, the over hit. So, you know, it happened that quick in like 15 or 20 minutes of game time. That over totally flipped, or the total, I guess, totally flipped.
So I got their play. I got the scoring summary up. The Chiefs scored their first touchdown with 5:45 to go in the game, with in the first half, with 9 minutes and 14 seconds to go in the third quarter. It was 35-7.
Yeah.
So. And they had two scoring drive. They had a 6-play, 80-yard scoring drive in 39 seconds. They had a 2-play.
They ran six plays in 39 seconds.
Yeah, then the half. That was the one that Kelsey was down the sideline. Yeah. But yeah, so they got 5 more plays up before that. So yeah, they scored what in a 10-minute stretch. Yeah, like I said, they scored 35 points. Pretty remarkable. So yeah, I really don't know. I have no feel on this game, just because I think both teams are playing great football down the stretch. That's it.
No, I agree. I think this is going to be your cliche typical heavyweight fight, where it's just, you know, haymaker, and the first guy to, you know, stumble or falter a little bit is going to be the one that comes up on the short side.
And obviously a rematch of the AFC championship game last year in Kansas City. If the Titans win and the Chiefs win, Mahomes will have to play his first road playoff game ever.
That's remarkable.
Yeah. Which is pretty amazing. All right. So official picks I'll give out this week. The Titans -3.5. Green Bay team total over 27.5. And then we'll get a little proppy with it. I'll take Ja'Marr Chase, 8 catches at +215. And then it's not out there, but whatever the total sacks, I've been looking all morning, total sacks in Rams-Bucks games, give me the over in that. I think you're going to get a bunch of sacks. Because also, the Stafford's a statue back there. I think the pressure that Vita Vea up the middle and those guys on the Bucks defensive line have, I think you're going to get a lot of sacks in that game. So over in sacks, those are the 4 picks I got there. I know a couple exotics in there, but that's what we got.
I'll keep it a little more contemporary. I like, I'm also riding Tennessee -3.5. I alluded to that earlier. I like the over in both the Green Bay game and the Tampa Bay game. Both of them sitting right around. The Green Bay San Francisco game is right around 47. Tampa Bay LA is at 48.5 right now. Both of those have dropped from where they opened. So, you know, maybe you chase a little bit of, chase a couple points there. I'd like the over in both of those. And then, as I said earlier, Buffalo +2.5. And I think they went outright.
Okay, so what time on Saturday or Sunday morning, if the 49ers lose, does Adam Schefter tweet out Jimmy Garoppolo carrying the water?
That was unreal. Unreal. Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, just crazy that Adam Schefter just thought of that tweet himself, you know, just completely out of the blue right before the game starts, that Jimmy G is the driving force to what brought San Francisco to the playoffs. It was crazy how he just thought that up, and definitely wasn't from Jimmy G's agent that sent him a text message. And Schefter just copied and pasted it.
Or also wasn't from the 49ers, because in the tweet he says this raises his value to both the 49ers. Well, no, the 49ers want to devalue. Well, if they want to trade him.
They want to trade him, right.
But yeah, no, why he would tweet that.
Come to find out, Jimmy G and Tom Brady have the same agent, so he's probably working a little angle there to maybe get some Tom Brady news down the stretch, you know, sometime later down the road. Maybe when Tom Brady announces his retirement, Schefter will be the first one on it. But yeah, just an absolutely wild tweet. I think we can for sure say that Schefter isn't really in the journalist game anymore. Could we agree with that?
Oh, I was just going to say, and look, we've been bagging on him a lot this year. And
I like Schefter too. I think he's very entertaining. I think he's good at what he does. But at the same time, once you realize it, you know, what it is that he does, then you can kind of, like I said, like you said, bag on him a little bit, kind of bust his balls a little bit. But if you're trying to take him serious as like, I don't even know if I could put Rappaport in that category, but you know, think back a few years, the John Claytons and the Chris Mortensons, he's definitely not that.
Yeah, the thing about Shefton, look, I also think, I said this before, like, I think he's a good guy. Like, I've never met him, but I watched his HBO thing. I think he's a good guy and everything. He's just almost become too big that he's he cannot be trusted, I think, as a, how do I phrase this? When he is tweeting out things like the Jimmy Garoppolo thing, he cannot be trusted. When he is tweeting out like contracts and stuff like that, fine, yeah, he's still going to get those scoops. Uh-huh. But his analysis, I don't think, can be trusted because he is then being a mouthpiece for the agent or a team, which he's always been. All the Rappaport, he's a mouthpiece for the right. team. They all are. But at least with like Woj, all these guys, but at least some of those guys is that you were able to trust them before that they're just reporting the facts, I guess, and not just
posturing
they haven't gone too far on carrying the water.
Yeah.
Like there's something the agent would want him to say, but maybe they scale it back down a little bit where it's more down the middle rather than just, okay, it's pretty easy. And you could see that. Like if Adam Schefter tweets anything about the Dolphins, you would know that's coming from Stephen Ross. Why Stephen Ross, Michigan guy, Adam Schefter, big Michigan guy. There's clearly a connection there. So why would you not think that it's from the owner? So
100%.
So that's the thing. Like he's been compromised over stuff too, because then he gets his, all the stuff gets leaked out. And so he's compromised and that it's pretty nuts how people have like turned on him reporting wise. Cause I think everybody kind of liked him before. They were like, all right, yeah, whatever. He's just a journal. Now he's like opining and turned into more of a personality and stuff. And it's gone off the rails for him. He's the tore meniscus doing the gritty.
Yeah.
which, well, white people need to stop doing the gritty.
That's could enough. Not agree more.
Like, just more. Stop. We got to stop ruining everything. Everything culture related, the white people got to stop. But all right, here's this F1 thing. This came out last week. F1 esports started like I think 2017, 2018. I've actually watched. I've the video game I've talked about. I got a wheel. Which I'm getting better at the wheel, but again, the back still hurts sometimes. So when I want to take a race off from the wheel, I just get on the controller and rest that up. So
I don't want to interrupt you too much, but I'm staying woke a little bit because I know which story you're talking about. I'm convinced this is why you got the steering wheel.
I bought the steering wheel before this. came on January 12th. I never heard of this guy.
Yeah.
Also, I'm not good enough. Did you see this last week?
Yeah, I did see it. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. So this guy. Awesome. Cem Balukbaşı, I don't even know how to CEM's his first name. He's Turkish. We'll go Balukbaşı. We'll just call him Cem. He was an F-Sports e-racer in 2017 and 2018. And then after that, he started, he won the world championship, I guess, twice. And he was like one of the fastest guys out there. So then some team was like, hey, you could start like actual in a race car with us. So 2019, he did a half season in the GT4 European Series. Don't really know what that is. But then he went on to open wheel in 2020 and 2021. He won two races in the GT4 again. He also did a little F3 Asian Championship, which is open wheel in Asia. Then he won his debut race in Euro Formula Open. Again, open wheel stuff. So he goes in to be a full race or a full driver. And then at the end of the season, they had him test an F2 car in Abu Dhabi. That was at the end. They did a bunch of F1 new car testing and F2 testing. And then after that, he did a good enough job to test F2. He got a seat for in the F2 series, which is one step below F1. And it's like the minor leagues. But the thing about that is all the cars are pretty much the same. They have like the same regulations. So it's pretty much your driving ability takes over. And that's how good. Obviously, some minor setup and stuff can be a difference, but the cars are pretty much all the same. It's not a wide gap like an F1. So yeah, this guy's went from a video game racer to actually driving a car in F2, and he'll be in there F2. It's pretty pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's an absolutely wild story. You know, how he goes from, like you said, the video game to living in real life. Like, imagine if you know, we're playing MLB The Show, and hey, my first baseman's really lighting it up. So guess what? The Rangers call me and say, hey, we need you to come jump in Frisco, get some reps there, and maybe make your way up to the big leagues. That, you know, it's, I know it's not quite the same, but you know, it's a wild story, and anything's possible these days, and nothing proves it more, I think, than this story right here. It's just absolutely, it's insane. Like, who would ever thought? Nobody.
Yeah, or maybe like an owner's watching the Madden Championships on ESPN and sees you're managing the clock fantastically, and he goes, "Hey, this guy's going to be the head coach. He's not going to scheme anything. We'll bring that guy in. He'll rally the troops. He'll be your buddy, whatever. He'll try to be a morale guy, but we're going to have the best clock management out there."
100%. He knows when to go for it on fourth down. He knows the analytics. He knows when to go for two. Let's get this guy going.
He knows when to call timeouts, and you know what? Maybe he runs four verts like 50% of the time in zone and get that tight end over the middle and just get him every time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, no, this is pretty, pretty crazy. The first time it's happened, and, yeah, pretty. So we'll have to see how he does in F2. They have a shorter season. They only have like 12 races, I think.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see what he does next year, if a video game guy. Because the thing too is, like, all the drivers,
they practice with simulators.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. They practice in the simulator, so they know what to do. So it's not a big jump from the driver going to the simulator. It's obviously a bigger jump for the guy going from the video game simulator to then the actual car. Because in the esports, they're not in a simulator. They're just, they have a wheel and pedals and that, because there's no G's, all the G forces and all that. So you got to get used to that. But pretty impressive stuff there. Something fun to look for, and we'll keep talking about it next year when the season starts. And we still look a month and 8 days after the finale in Abu Dhabi, still have not heard a word from Lewis Hamilton. He was allegedly partying last weekend with The Weeknd. He sold his $45 million penthouse in New York, which he never lived in once. And then he got knighted, but he didn't make a statement at the knighted. So we have not, he's gone silent on the socials. So we don't know what Lewis is up to, if he's even going to race again next year. So that's a big question.
I think it's safe to say Max Verstappen broke Lewis Hamilton.
Probably the FIA broke Lewis Hamilton more than Max, but it could be in there. All right, do you have anything before you finish up?
Yeah, one other quick little story. We've had your boy Colton Heisey from the Korn Ferry Tour. He's a caddy on the Korn Ferry Tour. I don't know if you saw this story. So there's this 19-year-old golf prodigy.
Yes.
His name's another tough name.
Akshay Bhatia.
There we go.
It's not hard.
it looks weirder than it. Or the Akshay is the part that got me. It's Akshay. The Akshay part got me. The Bhatia, I was all over that. The Akshay is what got me. He won this past weekend out in the Bahamas. This dude's like a stud golfer. He graduated high school early, skipped college so he could go be a pro and start on the Korn Ferry Tour. And his caddy, did you see the story how he found his caddy?
Yeah, I thought that was his girlfriend, but
potentially, yeah. So he was, he won the Valero Open last year here in Texas. And no?
Because Spieth won that. He's never won a PGA Tour
event. Oh, yeah, you're right. Excuse me. Yeah, you're right. That was a totally misstep on my, I didn't mean one, but he was playing in it. And, was doing as most of us do and scrolling the IG, and I guess found an IG model that caught his eye, slid into her DMs, and convinced her to caddy for him. And so she was on the bag this weekend with him in the Bahamas. He said he doesn't know a damn thing. She doesn't know a damn thing about golf, but he definitely probably has the best looking caddy on the Korn Ferry Tour, and went and won it in the Bahamas yesterday. So I thought that was a pretty wild story. This dude just handpicks his caddy off IG because she looks good in a bathing suit, and you know, doesn't really need a caddy out there because he knows what he's doing. He's just like, hey, check it out. I got this hot chick caddying for me, carrying my bag, and I'm out here winning, doing it.
No, I saw this, and some of his videos that came up on my like TikTok, and I swear he had a girlfriend that was different. I went back and looked, it's a different girl from this girl. So I guess whatever happened, that they had a falling out or whatever, but pretty funny that you just did that. Good for her. She got a nice trip to the Bahamas. Was she from, where is she from? Does she live in the Bahamas?
No, she is from, you know, because all of her IG pictures are tagged in the Bahamas. So maybe she is from the Bahamas. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. Also, kind of risky. That's not risky doing that, but it kind of is, because if you're like caddy out there, like there's kind of some rules that you have to know.
Yeah.
Like to not get your guy get a penalty. 100%. So like that could also like add some stress level to you making sure, like if you're, he won, he probably wasn't in the hazard a lot, but like if you put the bag down in the hazard, that's like a penalty. There's also like to rake a bunker. Is he just raking the bunkers for her, and like just some etiquette out there? Like that's kind of a risky move. But this guy, you said he dropped out of high, or he finished high school early, didn't go to college. This guy has been ridiculed. Like people have been like going after his parents a lot for pulling him out of high school early and like not sending him to college. And like doing what he's been doing of playing, getting sponsors exemptions on the tour, getting sponsors exemptions on the Korn Ferry tour. He made it through Q school to get his Korn Ferry card. But like this guy has been like pretty, he's been an interesting like person to follow because of his path to professional golf of pretty much now everybody goes to college at least for a year or 2 years. Mm-hmm. He pretty much dropped out of high school. I know he finished, but
he did the Bryce Harper.
Yes, he did. He did. And just got there as fast as possible. And he's been out already playing for 2 years. And so for him to win yesterday, was pretty, pretty impressive. And he's good. I'm glad that he's been one of my guys. I got a bunch of guys on my favorites list on the PGA Tour app that I like to follow. And whenever they're in a tournament, they pop up right to the top and you can don't have to scroll down the board. He's been one of those guys that has been in there just so I could see what he's been doing. Yeah, pretty impressive stuff from Akshay. Well, I assume that she'll get the caddy again for him in the Bahamas this week.
Got to assume.
Because I think that they are there again. They do 2 weeks in the Bahamas. Yeah, so we'll have to see. Also, my guy, MJ, who I've caddied for before, he got 15th. In his first start on the Korn Ferry Tour. So good job to him. All right, that'll do it for us. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back on Monday. Recap the football weekend. Thanks for tuning in.